It's the 2nd of December, and this is Rabbi Manny Shior.
Right, mine has been repaired, so Toda Rabba, thank you for coming, everybody. It's nice to be here. The weather's getting a little cooler. At some stage I'll have to put on my sheets winter 2015 rather than fall. We'll have to work out when that starts. It's meant to get cold this week, so maybe by next week already.
Yes, sir.
What? Yes? Oh, yes? Good. Good. No, it's fine. It's fine. It's really a pleasure to be helpful. What was it? One senior Rosh Hashiva once said to his students, "I don't mind so much if you quote my ideas in your name, but please don't quote your ideas in my name." Fine. The topic for today is Kibud Av V'Em, which is something on many people's minds, either as children or as parents. At some stage in life, most people, pretty much everybody's a child, although not everybody knows their parents. Most people do, Baruch Hashem. And many people are parents or grandparents, or have influence on the younger generation in different ways. Don't forget, Talmidim in many ways are like Banim, are like children. So even those people who may not have immediate children, they have influence on people who are up and coming and young. And therefore there are different approaches to this mitzvah, which I want to talk about today, with specific attention on one question, which is the boundary between Kibud Av V'Em and personal autonomy. How much do children really have to listen to their parents, and to what extent are they really entitled or maybe even obliged to be independent and to go against the wishes of their parents? This is a tricky subject, and as I mentioned to you as we're going through Sefer Bereishis, this is an underlying theme in Sefer Bereishis. Just think of last week's parsha with Shimon and Levi, and what they did in Shechem, and how Yaakov clearly criticizes them, and they say to him, "Well, what did you expect us to do? How can we just let this pass? How can they do this?" So, and the answer is yes, not clear. I mean, should they listen to Yaakov? Were they right to not listen to Yaakov? Should they have spoken to Yaakov? Also underlying the parshias, we see in this week's parsha when Yosef is taken away. So we see a parallel that Yaakov is punished on some level, midah keneged midah, for the lack of kibud av v'em that he had for his parents when he was away with Lavan, when he was busy making his fortune over in Paddan Aram, that he wasn't there with Yitzchak and Rivka, and therefore this also reflects in the next generation. So kibud av v'em comes through again and again in different ways through the parshas that we're reading as a key bein ha'adam l'chaveiro hashkafa. So I want to talk to you a little bit at the beginning about the underlying hashkafot of this mitzvah, and then we'll get into the halakhot. I'd like to say three introductory things. First of all, this beautiful Sefer Achinuch, which talks about the roots, the sources of the Kibud Av V'Em. You'll be aware, of course, that Kibud Av V'Em is number 5 on the Ten Commandments, the fifth commandment. And it is, in that sense, the bridge between the Bein Adam L'Makom commandments on the first side, of keeping Shabbat and believing in God and taking God seriously, etc., and the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro mitzvahs on the second half of the Luchot. Kibud Av V'Em is the bridge. Look at what he says here. Mesharshei mitzvah zo. The roots of this mitzvah, Sheroi lo la'adam sheyakev yigmo chesed. A person has to be straightforward, a makir toiv. You have to be someone who gives back the chesed. L'misha asei motova. To someone who did all that for you. V'lo yeh naval. Don't be an ingrate, a person who is like an inappropriate behavior, or mitnaker, and behave like a stranger. The kafui tova. Hakaras hatova is the opposite. You, this person is being a kafui tova, denying the chesed. Shezom midara, this is a terrible midah, umu'usa, and a disgusting midah, betachlis lipnei helokim v'anashim, not just from a religious, but from a human perspective, a person has to be grateful and give back that which they received. But not everybody received from their parents. Some people didn't have very good parents. Some people were given away by their parents aged 3 days old and given to the orphanage, whatever, and therefore what do they possibly owe their parents? Because their parents never did anything for them. Says the Chinuch, and also the Shiitin and Liboy, just bear in mind, he says, Ki ha'av ha'aim ha'nsibat ha'yotah ba'olam. Without your parents, you wouldn't exist. Maybe they weren't great parents, maybe they were even bad parents, but at the end of the day, they gave all of us life itself, which is something which is inestimable. Therefore, a person for the gift of life, what does one owe somebody else? They brought us to the world. The gamigiyubo, and usually the yagubo, the people put effort in, all the diapers they changed, and all the difficult teenage children moments that our parents went through with us, and that we went through with our children, etc. Kamigiyus bekatnuto ukeshiyigvazot, and then he goes into the next stage. When you bear this in mind, hamid banashay yalem imenu lahakitovat hakel boruchu. Kibud Avaim will bring a person to Kavod Shamayim, to connect with God. Shehu Sibatu V'Sibat Kol Avotav Ad Adam HaRishon. Because a person thinks, well, where did I come from? I came from my parents. Well, where did they come from? They came from their parents. Well, where did they come from? Where did everything come from? And it'll get a person thinking about how does anything exist? Where does anything get its sustenance from? Avir Ha'olam V'Sibik Tar Kol Yamav. And a person will realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps us through life and gives us what we need on a daily basis. And he puts a person is fit and well and working properly. But not by nefesh yodas or moskelet. A person is grateful that they have a mind, that they're not a horse. And he says that. She'ulali anefesh, shechanu hakel, without this neshama that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, yiye kasus. A person will be a horse, kepered, like a donkey, whatever, but ain't even. Meaning, really, there should be a bracha that we make in the morning. Shaloy asani tus. Before you say any of the other things, shaloy asani aved, just think shaloy asani tus. Baruch Hashem, I'm not a horse. Okay. And therefore, the chinuch clearly understands that kibud av ha'eim is a means to an end. It's not even so much about the individuals themselves. Maybe they were great, maybe they were not so great. But at the end of the day, they brought a person to life itself. And they, through them, you connect with the origins of everything, which ultimately is Hashem. And therefore, that's why the chinuch sees kibud av ha'eim not only as a bein adam lechaveru mitzvah, but also as a bein adam lemakom mitzvah. It goes in both directions. That's the first hashgafic point. The second hashgafic point, which is often missed, which I learned from my Rebbe Rav Berkowitz, and he was very insistent on this, is the following. Kibud av ha'eim is not a chok, it's a mishpat. And we'll see what that means right now. Remember the story of Mara when they left Egypt and they go through after they cross the Red Sea. Look at number 2. Vayisa Moshe et Yisrael miyamsuf. Moshe leads them from the Red Sea. Vayetsu amid bashur. They go to the desert. Vayelchu shloshet yamim bamidbar v'lo matzu mayim. Very famous story. Vayavo Marasa. They came to this place. Mara v'lo yachlu lishtot mayim mimara. They couldn't drink from there. Ki marimayim. Al kain karosh mamara. That's why it's called Mara, because the waters were bitter. The people complained al Moshe to Moshe lemor, and they said manishte. Vayitzakel Hashem, he cried out to God. Vayorei Hashem eitz, God shows him a tree. Vayaslech el hamayim, he throws it into the water. Vayintku hamayim, and the waters became sweet. And the last 6 words are what I really want to focus on. Sham sam lo chok, there he gave him a chok, umishpat and a mishpat. Vasham nisau, and there he tested them. What was the chok? What was the mishpat? This is before Sinai. What did we get? What was the chok and what was the mishpat? So the Chazal in the Mechilta say number 3, Shamsam lechok u'mishpat. Chok ze ha-shabbat. U'mishpat ze kibud av-ve'im. Now, this is interesting, because this challenges some of our assumptions as to what is the chok and what is the mishpat. Very often you ask people, what is the chok? They answer something we don't understand. That's not necessarily true. Meaning, Shabbat? I understand a lot about Shabbat. It's not inscrutable. It's God made the world, and there's a Shabbat, and there's a Ruchnius, and there's a re-spiritualization. There's a lot of things I understand about Shabbat. It's not just a chok.
But you wouldn't make it up yourself.
Good. Good, good, exactly.
What did she say?
You wouldn't make it up yourself if it wasn't already there. Meaning you'd never think of the 39 malachot, that I can't do this and I can't do that. And what's more, chok, the implication of chok is that it's fixed. Chakuk, chakika. It's great, engraved. You can't change it. Not to say that the application doesn't change as technology changes, but in principle, it is what it is, what it is, what it is. Kashrut is a chok. If I drop milk into my chicken soup, and I'm asking, is it kosher, is it not kosher? So then we get into a discussion about bottled b'shishim, a 60th, etc. What if I turn around and say, well, Rabbi, a 60th is terribly 18th century. You know, we're more into a 30th these days. You know, that speaks to me much more. So maybe we can adapt. No, no, that's not true. If the Rambam were to come and teach in the OU Center, which I'm sure he'd be very proud to do, okay, the Rambam would teach Hilchos Kashrus exactly like he taught Hilchos Kashrus in the 12th century in Postad, in Cairo. He would teach the same halachot. It doesn't change depending on who you are. But a mishpat is different. A mishpat is a rule of law, usually an interpersonal rule, which is sensitive in many ways to the circumstances. And we'll see from the Maharal in a second why kibud av va'em is the ultimate mishpat. And it makes a big difference if you treat the chok as a mishpat or as a mishpat as a chok. Look at the Maharal for a second, number four. Lama nikra kibud av va'em mishpat? Says the Maharal, why are we calling kibud av va'em a mishpat? We've explained this before. Ki hayidia, understanding. V'haseichel, seichel, something which is so often lacking, not such common sense, okay? Okay. M'chayev mitzvah zot, yoter misha kol mitzvah. If you haven't got seichel, you cannot keep kibud av va'em. Lekach nikra kibud av va'em mishpat. Very beautiful Maharal. You don't need seichel to keep Hilchos Kashrus. You just need to know the rules. But you do need seichel to keep kibud av va'em. Or the following might happen. This is a true story who happened to one of my rebbeim. He had a young man who was learning with him, Baal Tshuva, having a difficult time with his parents. The parents thought he was a bit strange. You know, he suddenly wears black and white all the time, and he suddenly has little strings coming out of his pants, and every time he comes out of the bathroom he talks to himself for a few minutes. Like, this is not normal behavior, this is very strange. And the relationship strained. And then the kid says, you know, what can I do to fix this? And he realizes, oh, kibud av va'em. I'm going to learn the halachas of kibud av va'em. He discovers this, and he says, my parents will realize that Torah is special, and all their friends who have non-religious children, they don't know about kibud av va'em. They treat their parents like who knows what. But I'm going to treat my parents like a melech and a malka, and my parents are going to realize how Torah is important for life. So what happens? The kid goes and learns all of kibud av va'em, and it says there, he reads a book, and he says you have to speak in a very polite way to your parents, and the most polite way to speak is in the third person. So he goes home to his regular non-religious parents living in New Jersey, and he starts talking in the third person. Would mother like to sit down? Would father like a cup of this? And the parents look at him and say, what is wrong with you? Like, why have you started talking in this way? Who like, it's bad enough if you have Mishigasin. Don't bring us into your Mishigasin like this. And he gets very upset. And he goes crying to the rabbi and he says, what did I do wrong? And he says, very posh, it was very simple what you did wrong. You treated kibud av va'em like chukim, a bunch of rules. This is what you do, this is what you do, and that's what you do. That's not how it is. Look at the Maharal, you need seichel. You have to know who are your parents. What is their society? How do they wish to be respected? How do they relate to children? It's very different. If the Rambam were to come back in the 21st century to teach the laws of kibud av va'em, oh my goodness, he'd have to readjust a lot. Similarly with marriage. The laws of marriage, the halachas and the hashkofas of how husbands and wives interact are very much mishpatim. You can imagine a marriage situation from the 11th century in Fostat, where there's, you know, a man of 60 with three wives, one of 23, one of 19, one of 12. You're gonna talk about shalom bayis? How does that work? How do we even relate to that? So this is a mishpat which is very critical. So that's the second thing. Kibud av va'em is a mishpat, not a chayk, and therefore cannot be related to in a way without seichel. Seichel is very critical. I once had I took a ride once with a young girl. She's never spoken to me since. She called me up in London once and said, "I hear you're going to the airport. Can I share a cab with you?" from Hendon to the Heathrow Airport. I said, no problem. We went together and we were sitting opposite each other in the plane. And we got a cab also in Yerushalayim. So I got to talk to her for like 6 or 7 hours. And she was telling me all about her life. She became frum and she doesn't talk to her parents anymore and she has no relationship and the whole thing's dysfunctional. And I said, oh, I'm very sorry, etc. And she's telling me because, you know, I can't eat anything in my parents' house because they don't keep kosher. I said, well, surely there's something you can eat. Maybe you can have like some cold. No, I can't eat anything because my rabbi told me that it's treif. I mustn't touch it. I mustn't go there. I mustn't speak. And I said, by the time I finished, I said, look, here's something. I hope you don't mind me saying this, but you're probably more responsible for the breakdown with your parents than they are. There's so much you could do. There's so many coolers you could rely on. You could have this. You could do that. You could have double wrap this. And she went nuts. She said, I'm not hearing this. I don't want to hear this. This is not. I said, well, okay, fine. Because she's got no seichel. Nice girl, but no seichel. And she treated kibbutz avi aim in a way which was lacking in thought, and as a result, suffered very badly. That's the second thing. The third thing is very, very interesting, and it's based on a Gemara in the Yerushalmi. Everyone knows the beginning of this Gemara, but most people don't know the end. Look at number 5. Imoshel Rebbe Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon's mother, I already see people nodding. They know Rabbi Tarfon's mother already. Yarda Letayel, she went for a walk on Shabbos. Letoy Chatzira, she was in her yard, B'Shabbos, on Shabbos, and what happened is that her shoe broke. So she's standing there, an older lady, presumably, and she's standing there with one foot in the air, and she doesn't want to put a foot down because it's dirty on the ground, and she can't get back in the house. The halach Rabbi Tarfon v'hiniach shtei yadav tachas parsoseya. He put his hands, he crawled on his hands and knees with his hands under her feet. V'haytama aleches aleihem, she walked on his hands, ad she gila mitasa, until she got back to her to the sofa. Pam achat, it happened once. Chala, the Rabbi Tarfon got sick. The nichnasu chacham levakro, and the rabbis all came to visit him. So they met with the mother. Amra lehem, she said to them, "Hipalalu al Tarfon bani, please daven for my son Tarfon, shehu noig be covered yoter midai. He is the tops $1 million when it comes to kibbutz avi aim." Amra, they said to her, "Ma avidlach? So what does he do that's so amazing?" But she asked lehem, she told him the story about how he crawled on his hands and knees. Amrullah, they said to her, "Afilu oise kain elef alafim." Even if he did a million times more than that, "Adain lechetzi kibbut she'amra Torah lo higia." Meaning, they're not trying to talk him down, but they're trying to say to her, "This is what you needed, so this is what he did. That's what he had to do. Even a million times more than that, he would have to do, because at that time, that's what you needed. He has to do for you what you need." Now the flip side of that story is the next part, which they never teach in the schools, which is a parallel story with Imoshel Rabbi Yishmael. Imoshel Rabbi Yishmael bow the kiblas alo rabbeinu. She came to the yeshiva one day, and the rabbis met with her. Amra lehen, she said to the rabbis, "Giru bi Yishmael bani, please criticize Yishmael my son. She'eino nohik bi bakavod, he doesn't treat me right." That's why they don't teach this well in the schools. The rabbis were embarrassed, their faces went pale. How can they? Amar, they said, it's possible that Rabbi Yishmael doesn't treat his parents right. And they said to her, Amrula, they said to her, "Madidlech, what does he do for you that's so terrible?" And look at what she says. Amra, she says to them, "Kadunafak mi beit vada." When he comes home from the beit vada, he's a Rosh Hashiva, he's a Dayan, he comes home from a hard day being a Rosh Hashiva, and she worships him, "My son, the Rosh Hashiva." She's a Jewish mother, you know? She thinks the world of him. Ana boy Mishnah's Ragle, I ask him every night, I want to wash his feet. Umishti mayhem, and drink the feet water. Yeah. She worships the dust on his feet. She wants to wash his feet. Umishti mayhem, and drink the water. But not shabbily, and he won't let me. Of course he won't let her. Because she's not entirely right in the head. There's something not right there. Amrullah, they said to him, they went to Rabbi Yishmael, they said to him, "You know something? Your mother's a bit strange. But hoil vahuritsona, if that's what she wants, hukvoda, that's how you'll machabid her." Meaning, she's not asking you to do anything which is asur, she's not asking you to do anything which is dangerous. She's just really weird. She's very strange. I think that this Gemara is there because everybody, and usually I'm speaking to a younger crowd who are dealing with parents in adolescent terms, everybody thinks their parents are weird. And everybody thinks their parents are strange, and everybody is certainly at a teenage age a bit embarrassed about their parents. The Gemara is telling you, if you think your mother's weird, then she can't be more weird than Rabbi Ishmael's mother. And if he had to deal with her, then you have to deal with your people. And the answer is, this third point is, you can't be mechabed your parents the way that you would like them to be. You wish your mother was Rabbanit Yemina Mizrahi. Okay, good. Very nice. She's not. And therefore, she's someone else and she needs to be related to on her level and your father on his level, etc. As to who they are, not who you would wish them to be. And that's what they said. Now, later on in the shiur, we'll either see in about 10-15 minutes, a very important question by the Chazon Ish, which is, if that's so true, really, if what they want is the way you respect them, then how come there are so many things in life that we're allowed to go against our parents on? If our parents present us with a marriage partner and say, this is the girl you're going to marry, I brought her home, she's lovely, you like her, you'll get used to her, it's fine. You don't have to marry her. You don't have to marry her. Ah, what if your father says, your mother's going to cry every night asleep, you're going to marry that other girl, we don't like her. The answer is, I'm sorry, you don't like her, that's not my problem. In all, you know, it's to be polite, but at the end of the day, I don't have to marry who you want me to marry. Why don't we say, you know, ho the huritsona hu kvoda? We don't say that. And therefore we're going to have to work out where those lines are, and at what point you actually turn around to your parents politely and respectfully and say, you know something, I'm not going to listen to what you have to say on this particular issue. So they're the three initial points. It's not just Bein Adam L'Chaveru, it's Bein Adam L'Makom as well, number one. Number two, it's a Mishpat, not a Chayk Nid Seichel and Yediyah, as the Maharal said. And number three, that what they want is usually the way that you're Mechabed them, and you can't just pretend that they're other people. That's the first point. The actual halachas themselves are fairly straightforward. There are two mitzvot in the Torah. Number six, one is a in the Aseret Sedibros itself. Number six, Kavod is Avicha Vesemecha. Have kavod. We'll see what kavod is in a minute for your father and mother. Leman Yarich Yemecha, etc. I'm not going over the whole thing. And similarly, in Parshas Kedoshim, we've seen many, many mitzvot from Kedoshim in the Shiurim. In number seven, it says Ish Imoy VaAviv Tirau. A person has to have yira for their parents. The Eshav Society Shmaru, but they also have to keep Shabbat. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, and we'll see that there is a limit to the yira when the parents are asking them to break Shabbat. You will, of course, have realized, and you will have known from before, that the av and the aim are inverted in the Pesukim. First, in the case of Kavod, it gives first the av and then the aim. In the case of yira, it gives the aim and then the av. It's well known that Rashi brings down, because you're more likely to have kavod for your mother, so stresses the father, yira for your father, stresses the mother. But actually Chazal says something slightly different here. There's kol kodem the mikra kodem b'maaseh. Usually if there is an order in the psukim, then that is a priority order. If they're first in the psukim, then they're first in priority. That's why the order is inverted, Talmud Lomer, Ish Imoy Aviv Tirau, to show you that between mother and father, Magid Sheshneim Shekulim Zeh Bazeh, that there is no priority between the father and the mother in general terms, that a person has an obligation to give cover to them both. There are situations in which the mother herself has to give a certain kavod to the father, and therefore the child will be along with that giving kavod to the father. But generally speaking, the mother and the father take equal priority. This, of course, becomes tricky sometimes when the mother and the father are divorced, and then the mother and the father are working on opposite teams, and then the child has to try and somehow run between the two without giving priority to either, which can be difficult because usually the child is perhaps partisan as well in one direction or another, which is very difficult. The Shulchan Aruch also stresses that when it comes to the children, the son and the daughter, there's also equality. Echad ha'ish, number 9. The echad ha'isha, it doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman, shavim bekavod u'moresh alav ve'ein. They have equal obligations to give honor to their mother and father. Ella, but rather, who comes first, a spouse or a parent, says the Shulchan Aruch, a spouse. K'she ha'isha, sometimes the wife is part of her own family. She has her own husband, her own children, and there will be a conflict between her husband and her own family and her parents. Says the Shulchan Aruch, sometimes she is exempted from her own kibud av va'em, shehi meshubedet lebaala, because she is obligated to her own family. Lefikach he patura mikibud av va'em. She's parted from kibud av va'em. The question is whether this goes the other way as well. In this day and age, where, as I said before, marriage is not that she's meshubedet to him, but he's also meshubat to her. It's much more of a partnership these days, and therefore the discussion of, you know, who are we going to for Pesach this year, your parents or mine, you know, if she wants it, he has to give priority to the wife, she has to give priority to the husband before the parents. There's nothing more that people like to argue about is the parents-in-law, right? Yeah. Why are you always down on my parents? I'm not. You're always down on my parents, etc. You know how it goes. It's a kind of classic refrain. So it's basically Shulchan Aruch is saying that at the end of the day, Shalom Bayis will trump Kibud Av Va'em, and that has to be dealt with very, very sensitively. What if the parents don't seem to be deserving of Kibud Av Va'em? Look at number 10. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Afilu Haya Aviv Rosha. Even if the parents are a Rosha, Ubal Averis, and they do Averis, Machabdoi, they still have Kovod and they still have Yira, the Ramah disagrees and says, Vayeshram and De'ein Wachuyiv Lechabad Aviv Rosha. If he really is a Rosha, then there is a line, there is a limit. Elein Kin Asa Tshuva, until he does Tshuva, and you get into a conversation about who is a Rosha and who is not a Rosha. Certainly if the parents are not religious and the children are religious, there's no question that, God forbid, that's not called a Rosha. That's for sure not, because a person who is not religious on the whole is not religious because they didn't have a background in education, and therefore the children 100% have to be, in fact, extra careful, because there's also Kiddush Hashem and Chilal Hashem issues there. But if the parent is abusive in some way, either physically or mentally or emotionally, psychologically or sexually or however it is, there's no question that the children do not have to be the victims of an abusive relationship, absolutely not, and they have to find some way to navigate themselves around that relationship. There's much been written on that, and there are whole forum now out on that. This unfortunately is not an unusual thing. I mean, it is an unusual thing, but it's not unheard of, and therefore a person has to definitely not be a victim, but they still at the end of the day do have parents and have to work out to deal with that. What is covered and what is Mora? So Mora is dealing with Yira first. Look at number 11. Ezer Mora. Says the Gemara, says Shulchan Aruch, quoting the Gemara in Kiddushin, and what is Mora? So Mora means fear, but it doesn't mean fear. It doesn't really mean awe either. Awe is a word that people don't really use these days. It means respect at the end of the day. What's that? Yeah, because everything's awesome. Yeah, and no one really knows what awe means. But it means respect. That you don't treat your parents like equals. Says the Shulchan Aruch like this. Lo ya'amod bimkomo. If the parent has a certain place to stand, hamiyuchad lo, which is special to them, la'amod sham besod zikenim. If they're a special important person, they stand here when they're debating or relating to people in chaverav. If the parent has a place in Shul to daven, then they can't stand there or sit there. We'll see. The parent, of course, can be mochel. The parent can and should be. The parent can say, look, I don't mind, it's fine, but in principle they have to not be there. But if the parents have a special seat in the house, the children shouldn't sit in the seat without asking permission. The children shouldn't contradict the parents. And they shouldn't agree with the parents in front of them. What does this mean, they shouldn't agree? So this is where the seichel comes in. What does it mean they shouldn't agree with their parents? Sometimes to agree with a parent is a chutzpah. The parents having an argument with somebody, and the children come in and say, you know something, I don't know why you're arguing, my father's right, and that's the end of it. Okay, now it's all fine. It's a chutzpah. It's a chutzpah that you've intervened and now everything's fine. Sometimes to agree can be a chutzpah. Sometimes to disagree is not a chutzpah. There's no chok that a child is never allowed to have a disagreement, debate. You know, this is the father votes Republican, the child votes Democrat. Okay? Very nice. Usually these days it's the other way around. But anyway, whatever. But the child doesn't have to say yes, yes, yes to everything. Sometimes the parent wants the kid to be independent and active and have their own mind and opinions. There's no chutzpah in that, unless there is a chutzpah in that, and they have to be aware of that. Even to say my father's right, like I said. They shouldn't call their parents by their first name. Lo b'chayav, not when they're alive, lo b'mutar, and not when they passed away. Ela omer, they should say Abba Moiri, my father, my mother, etc. The question comes up, of course, what happens if the parents are very modern, sort of hippie, kind of left wing people, and they want to be called by their first names, and they say to the kid, look, you know, father and mother, mum and dad are terribly, you know, hierarchical. We don't agree with that. Just call us, you know, Bob and Sheila. And what does the kid do? What does the kid, I mean, I don't know why I came up with those names, Bob and Sheila, but whatever, just call them whatever they call them. So it's very difficult again for the kid to say, I'm not going to do that, I'm going to call you something which upsets you and irritates you, l'shem kibud av va'em. How does that work? So at the end of the day, the child has to say, look, this makes me uncomfortable and I really feel that this is not the right thing to do, but if you insist, then, you know, you're the parents, and I call you what you want to be called, but you should just know that I'm not comfortable with this, and this is something very difficult for me. Hayasham Aviv Kashem Acherim. This is an interesting question. I'm not going through all the details, but let's say the father has the same name as other people. Mashaneshimam, so they have to change the name of the other person. Im hu shem shehu peli, if it's an unusual name. Your father's called Colonimus. I have a nephew called Colonimus. Okay? It's his second name, Baruch Hashem. So your father's called Colonimus, and you have a best friend also happens to have a friend called Colonimus. So you can't call your best friend Colonimus, because people that you hear that they hear you saying the name, they think you're saying your father's name. That's not appropriate. Okay? Shayna called Regilin Likroisbo, because people are not used to the name. Of Shame Sheregilinbo, people the name that your father's called David. Shkoyach, everybody's called David, so you don't have to worry about calling David. Mutali Kroisa Cherim Shalom B'fanim. You're allowed to say the name even if it's not in front of your parents. If it is in front of your parents, it becomes difficult, because you and this is one of the reasons why in the Tzavar of Rabbi Yehuda Achosid there's an issue of not marrying a person with the same name as your parents, because what's going to happen is your father's called David, your husband's called David. Of course you can call your husband David when you're not with your parents, but then when you're sitting with your parents, you shout David, your father turns around, and it's awkward and difficult. And therefore they say that they should give the husband another name, a nickname, Dovi, this, whatever, Dudu, whatever it is, and they should find a way to do that. You should know that one of my Rebbeim told me a Maisa once that he was contacted by a lady whose child was marrying a non-Jewish girl, and asked to do something to intervene. And he said, what can I do? He said, to speak to him. So he spoke to the guy and he said, look, you know, at the end of the day, what are you doing? And he went through all the arguments, and he says, I'm not care, I don't care, I love her, she's, you know, I don't care, I love my mother too, but I'm not going to give her my happiness, etc., etc. So he said, look, you do what you have to do. What's her name? He said, Rachel. So he said, isn't that your mother's name? He goes, yeah. So what? He goes, very dangerous for your mother to marry a girl with the same name as your mother. He broke it off. People, I'll tell you another. Ma'aser Shehaya. My father. People, when it comes to superstition, people are very frum. My father once was went to a funeral, which was on a reform cemetery, where their friends, had a parent that passed away, and he was there with another friend of his. This other friend keeps gornish me gornish, nothing. He'll mamash, you know, eating ham sandwiches on Pesach. It's not like everything. And they walked, and I used that case advisedly, because I saw him eating a ham sandwich on Pesach once. I actually saw that. And it's fine, he doesn't care, I don't care, I'm not religious. They walked off the cemetery, so the guy turns around to my father and says, where do we wash our hands? So my father said, well, it's a reform cemetery, they don't do that, you'll have to wash it when you go home. He goes, I'm not going home without washing my hands. I says, well, you're going to be standing here all day, there's nowhere to wash your hands. So he says, I'm not going home. He says, I don't understand, you don't keep anything, you're not interested. He says, I'm not going home. So he drained the radiator of his car, the water out of the radiator of his car, Master Shehaya, to wash his hands, because he wouldn't go home, because he wouldn't.
What happens if your father's name is Abba?
Oh.
What happens if your father's name is Murray? Do you say Abba Murray?
Right, Murray and Abba, that's bad muzzle. But no, you find a name, there's plenty of names for father in there, dad, whatever, there's a way to deal with all this. You certainly can't call your father Abba if he's called Abba. So you have to work a way around that. Fine. Looking number 12. So this we're going to see soon is going to be one of the key questions we're going to ask today. Ad heichen morat. So how far does that go? Hayhaben lubush chamudoy. So the Shulchan Aruch is a very extreme level. Even if the child was dressed in his finery, which he gets this from the Gemara, but Yosef Barosh Akal sitting at the in the front of the Lord Mayor. Ubao avi ve'imoi, and the mother or the father come v'karu v'gadav and tear his clothes, v'hakao al rosh and hit him on the head, the yarko b'fanav and spit in his face. Lo yachli matam, he cannot do anything, he cannot say anything to them, and he shtok, he should keep quiet. V'yira min ha'melech malchei amlachim shetzivao v'kach. Now, you'll see why the Shulchan Aruch brings that case later when we see the Gemara that deals with Dama ben Nesina, whose mother was like this. So, he says you can't do anything. You can't do anything, you can't say anything, you have to take it on the nose, but we'll see that there is a limit to this, that the Ramah comes in later and says. I'm going to skip a few sources here. There are ideas to stand up for your parents as well. Number 14, Rav Yosef ki havashama al, Rav Yosef was blind. When Rav Yosef used to hear the footsteps of his mother, okay, kara de ime, ama, he used to say, ekam mikam shchina da'ati. I'm going to get up for the Shechina. My mother's coming in the room. But again, seichel, a person can't stand to attention when their parents come to in the room and like salute in a way that the parents, especially if the parents feel and find that to be weird, the child has to find a way of doing that in a natural way that the parents will feel is respectful and appropriate, not necessarily strange. Now look at the Gemara I was talking about before, number 16. The Gemara in Kiddushin. Shalom is Rabbi Eliezer. How far does Kovod Kibud Av Ve'Em go? We'll talk about Kovod specifically in a minute. Amalem, he said to them, and he brings the example of this non-Jew in Ashkelon. The Dama ben Nesina Shmai, called Dama ben Nesina. And it's an interesting thing. When do we ever bring examples from the local non-Jewish Romans as to how to do a mitzvah? Dafka Kibud Av Ve'Em seems to be something that we do, maybe because of Esav. Meaning of all the mitzvahs that Esav did, which were few and far between, Kibud Av at least was, and Aim, but Av certainly was one that he excelled. Bikshu mimenu chachamim, a famous story, Avanim le'eifal b'shishim ribu ischar. They needed a special jewel, and they were prepared to pay 600,000 gold coins for it. But Rav Kahana, Masay Rav Kahana says, Shmoinim ribu, 800,000. B'hayim mafteach munach tachas mirshoysav shalavim. The key for the safe where the jewel was resting was under the pillow of his father's pillow, and his father was sleeping. The light's searing, and he didn't wake his father. Oh! What a godless, what a tzidkus. So I ask often my students when I teach them this, so what does this teach you? So they say, you shouldn't wake your parents. I said, come on, tell me. If somebody came to your door and said, you won $1 million, I just need your father to sign on this line, because if he doesn't sign, you can't have the money. So you turn around and say, oh, he's asleep, I couldn't possibly wake him up, I'm not going to take the $1 million because I can't wake my parents. And then later your parents wake up and you say, Dad, you'll never guess, I respect you so much, I lost $1 million because I wouldn't wake you up today. So what would your parents say to you? They tear you apart. Meaning, there's no chok that a parent cannot be woken up. Dama ben Nesina felt that, you know, his father didn't want to be woken up, but maybe he's tackle learning it like a chok, which is not right, because maybe he's not sensitive to that. But he wouldn't wake him up. There's no din that you have to never wake your parents up. It depends on the scenario. The next day, anyway, he got his money back. This year, Lashana Acheret, Natan Lekorosh Baruch Scharo, he got his money back because there was a whole, he had a para aduma. I'm not getting into all of that now. Look in the third line from the bottom. Ki asa Rav Dimi Amar, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, "Pam achas hayelovish sirkun." This is the story that the Shulchan Aruch passes. Once we saw he was wearing his marvelous clothes, Shalzav, Bahayoshev, and Gedoli Rome. He was sitting with the great people of Rome. Ubata Imoi, his mother came, Bakarasa Mimenu, and she tore his clothes, Batapchaloy al Roshu, she smacked him on the head, Bayarkaloy the Fanav, and she spat in his face. Balohichlima, and he didn't say anything. Why did she act like that? Tosfos says, Yesh Midrash, she had some Mutureches Midasa. Never. She was not right in the head. She was also someone who was disturbed on a certain level, and therefore he wouldn't do anything to her. So the question is, how far does that go, and do we really pass it like that? And I want to raise the question now that I raised before from the Chazon Ish. Look at number 17. Duratzona zeu kibud. If really what they want is how you respect them, im ha'av rotzeh betakanat bano. If the father wants some behavior from the son, u'mitzta'er kishenoseh isha she'ein l'ratzon ha'av, and he's upset because the son won't marry a girl that the father wants him to marry. Lama Why should the son be allowed to upset him? And the Chazon Ish accepts that absolutely the son is allowed. The son does not have to marry that woman. How can that be allowed, says the Chazon Ish? Why is that not included in Mora? You can't contradict your parents. Oh, you broke the fifth commandment. Actually, it's Yira, not the fifth commandment, it's Yira, okay? But you can marry a girl that your parents don't like. What's more upsetting to the parents than for one minute you said no, or the whole of your life you marry a girl that they can't bear? Surely it's more upsetting to marry the girl, and yet you're allowed to marry the girl. Why is that? And we'll get to the answer to that question in just a couple of minutes. Let's have a look at Kavod first. Look at number 80. Ezu Kavod. So we've had Yira. Yira is respect, not standing in the parents' place, not contradicting them, etc. Ezu Kavod. What is Kavod? So the word kavod is from kaved. It means it's heavy. It's a burden. Parents have to be sometimes a burden. Machiloi, you have to make sure they have food. Umashkeu, that they have what to drink. Malbish, they have clothes. Machase, they have linen, things that they need. Machnis, you have to bring them in. Moitzi, you have to take them out. Vitnenelo, but save upon him office. And you have to do it with a smile. Which is interesting, because the smile is really everything. But the at the end of the day, at a certain point in life, parents are needy. You hope that they'll live to an old age and they'll become needy. That's the natural way of things. And therefore a person has to understand that kavod is that obligation to look after them. There are of course the limits, and we'll see what those limits are in a minute. Certainly financially, we'll talk about that in a second, which that leads to the issue of obedience to parents, which will extend from that. But sometimes a person can find looking after their parents very difficult, challenging, and the Shulchan Aruch accepts and understands that. Look at number 19. The Shulchan Aruch says, Misha nitrafa daf aviv or imo, someone whose parents are sick and they maybe have Alzheimer's or whatever it is, and it's very disturbing to look after them. This is not a new thing. I mean, Baruch Hashem, people live now to an old age, and therefore we have different kind of challenges at the ages of 80, 90, 100 even, that people didn't have back in the day when they lived to 40, 50. But still, so someone whose parents are disturbed in that way, mishtadel linhog yimahem kefidatam, you have to do as much as you can, okay? To do as much for them, achirucham aleihem, to look after them, to feel a sense of to help them. The in e efshaloi la'amod, at the point at which it really becomes impossible to do this anymore, and there is that point, and he understands that mipnei shenishtageu biyotzer, because they're just, you just can't cope with that, the stress of dealing with a parent who is in that state. Yelech loy v'yenicham, you're allowed to leave them. You're allowed to employ somebody else to deal with them, and this is natural and normal, and that's why there are all these wonderful Filipino people in Haranof. There were people, I'm sure, being assigned Shas, who were Filipinos. They go to Dafyomi every day, they wheel people in, and you know, these guys, it's Hamid Chachomim now, these Filipinos, because they hear so much Torah, and the Shulchan Aruch understands that there comes a point at which you just can't cope anymore, especially now in today's world where the parents, the children themselves can be in their 70s. The children are not young, the children are old as well, and the parents are even older, so that clearly part of the Shulchan Aruch understands that and passes that. Now we get to answer the question of the Chazon Ish. And the question of the Chazon Ish again is, what is the limit of Yira for the parent? At what point can you turn around and say, I'm not doing what you tell me to do, even though it upsets you? So the answer to that question comes from another question, which is, who has to pay for the kavod? Meaning kavod costs money. It's nursing care, it's food, and it's drink, and it's housing, and it's rent, and it's all of these things to look after parents. Says number 20, Iboilu, they ask the question, Michel me, who has to pay? Meaning the case is like this. The parents need to go into a nursing home, sheltered accommodation, and it costs $3,000 a week. But the parents are millionaires. The parents have $100 million in the bank. But the parents say to the children, it's your mitzvah. We've given all our money to the OU Center in Israel to run programming and pay their staff. We're not going to pay a penny towards our nursing care. Your mitzvah, you pay. And the kid says, well, that's ridiculous. You're worth millions, hundreds of millions. And they go to Beis Din. You can take your parents to Beis Din. You can take your children to Beis Din. Who has to pay? So says the Gemara. Rav Yehuda Amar, Rav Yehuda says, Michel Ben, the child has to pay. Sorry. It's the child's mitzvah. Rav Nosson Bar Oishi Amar, no, Michel Av. The parents have to pay. was the halachas, machlokas. Oru le rabbanu le Rav Yirmiya, the rabbis taught Rav Yirmiya, the amrila, the great Rav Yirmiya, commander amu mishalav. The Gemara already paskins like the view, which is the parents have to pay. So what does the child have to do? Meisvei, the Gemara raises a question. It says, kavedes avicha ve'esemecha, and it says, kavedes Hashem mihoncha, give honor to God from your money. Surely you have to respect parents even if it costs you money. Why are you using their money? So the Gemara says no. If it's your parents' money, what are you putting in if it's their money? So the answer is lebitl malacha. You have to put in effort. You have to be prepared to lose a day's work or lose this or lose that because you have to be there physically to help them. But at the end of the day, the halacha is, and we'll see the shulchan aruch right now, if the parents have money, the parents have to pay. Looking at the Rambam, number 21. Ezer kavod, what is kavod? Machil, mashkeh, malbish, umachaseh, mishal av. With the parents' money. The child can say to the parents, with your time and the parents' money. Okay? But you might not have to lose your job over it, but you have to give your time. Meaning you say to the parents, I'll do whatever you need me to do in terms of effort, but at the end of the day, your checkbook is paying the bills. 22. Similarly, the Shulchan Aruch. Zeh shemachilu mashkeh. When it says you have to give your parents food and drink, etc., Mishal ave Amos with the parents' money. In Yeshlo, if they have money, the parents might not have money. In Eilav, if the parents have no money, but Yeshua then, and the children do have money, then of course the child has to pay. Kofin also, we force the child, Vazanav, if he has to look after his parents, Kifi Mashihu Yochel, insofar as he can, obviously. Now, the question comes up, that's with Kavod. When it comes to Kavod, a person has to do it with their parents' money. What about Yira? Does a person have to respect their parents with their parents' money, quote unquote, or with their money? See how that works now. The Shulchan Aruch paskins the shari we saw before, and Hechen Kibud Avayim number 23. Even if the parents take the child's money, they take the child's wallet. Okay, shaloi, and throw it in front of the child's face into the sea. They steal the child's car and go joyriding around the town. Okay? It happens at a certain age, people have to rebel a little bit. Okay? Says the Shulchan Aruch, lo yachlimein, the child cannot upset them, the lo yitzar, if they can't get angry with them, the lo yichos connect them, can't get irritated with them, el yikabu gzeres akos of yishtok. You have to take it on the nose. They just threw $100,000 into the sea. Stay quiet. Says the Ramah, no, sorry. Yeshomrim, there is an opinion. The Imrot sel is rock ma'ot shel ben liyam. If they want to throw your money into the sea, the parents want to throw your money, the child's money, yochalim, you can stop them, even if that upsets them. When it comes to kavod, and this is probably the most important line of this bit, when it comes to kavod, looking after the parents in the nursing home bills, it's mishal av. We know it's the parents' money if they have money. Avalom mishal ben, not the child's money. Ve'ein chiluk bein lechabdo olatara. Says the Ramah, it's the same with yira. If your parents are asking you for respect, meaning to do what we say, that's only with, quote unquote, their money, not with your money. If the parents want to throw their own money into the sea, if the parents want to go what they call ski holidays, spending the kids' inheritance, ski, S-K-I, okay? They want to go, they want to spend all the rest of their money on a 15-month cruise around the Caribbean, and that's going to leave everyone penniless. Okay, it's their life, it's their money, you do what they like. It doesn't belong to the children. Children might not be happy about it, but that's their problem. But for the parents to take the children's money, says the Ramah, no, absolutely, you can stop them. It's going to upset them. Okay, so they'll be upset. But that's only before they threw it. It's possible to stop them. But in Kfar Zarku, if they've already done it, what's the point getting upset with them? I mean, it's done. You can take them to base then. Fine. The dafke im roitzel is rock kiso leyam. It's only if it's their money, not if it's his money, etc. And that we saw. Now, the point here is, when is it the child's money, quote unquote, and when is it the parents? The parents ask the children to obey them, to do what they want them to do, but it's going to cost the child dearly to do that, to agree to that. At what point do we draw a line and say, no, you don't have to listen to your parents because they're asking you to respect them with your money, your life, your happiness. At what point do we draw that line? And I'm going to give you a few cases now where the post can try to draw that line and say, look, there comes a point when a parent asks their child to do something which is so fundamental to the child that they're basically asking them to give away something which is deep to themselves, and the parents have no right to ask that. Number 24. An interesting tshuva of the Ma'arik, Rav Yosef Kolon, before the Shulchan Aruch in Europe in the 1400s, he's dealing with the following question. The father wants the son to marry a woman, the son doesn't like her. He wants to marry another woman. The Asher Nistapakta, you ask a question, he says, in Yesh Koach B'yad Ha'ab, does the father have the ability, Limchot B'yad B'no, to stop the son, Lisa Isha Asher Yichbots, by marrying the girl he wants? Haben, that the girl that would son wants to marry. Lefi ani yudaiti, he says, my opinion is, nira she'im haya isha ha'hogenet lo, this is an important point, if the girl that the son wants to marry is a nice girl, objectively there's no reason not to marry her. Poor girl's also a nice girl, yeah? And meaning that the parents just have some other issue, which is, there's nothing wrong with a girl, the parents have a problem. I don't know. The parents are Hasidish, we only marry people who are Hasidish. Okay? You can't marry her, she's a yekka. Or the parents are Haredi, and the kid wants to marry a girl who is modern Orthodox. A nice, strong, good girl, but she doesn't fit. Oh, the parents say, we'll never speak to our friends again if you marry her.
But if the girl's not Jewish.
Oh, so then she's ain't not getting it, no. And even if the girl is Jewish, the girl sees a guy, she meets him on the internet. He's on death row in Texas. And she says, you know something, he's a lovely guy. Everyone misunderstands him. Even his first family that he, you know, whatever. Kill them all, God forbid. You know, but I see, he's a sweetie pie. I've met him, he's a nice guy. He's a Jewish guy. The answer is no, you can't marry him. it's not suitable. So says the Ma'arik, if the girl is basically fine, it's just the parents have an issue. You know, we don't marry people unless they're from our group, this group, whatever. No. The father has no halachic ability to object. Chada, number one. Even when it comes to money, and the rabbis agree, Rabbi Yirmiyah, Commander Amma Michel Av, we saw that Gemara, everyone agrees that the parents have to pay for the nursing care. This is how everybody paskens, he says. Kol shekein, all the more so, hacha in your case, it's not about money, it's about your happiness. It sounds a bit romantic now. To leave the woman he loves, to have to marry another woman that he doesn't feel so happy with. You can't ask someone to give that up. That's not acceptable. At that point, there is no obligation to listen to the parents. Of course, he has to be polite, and maybe he has to think about what the parents are saying. You know, very often the 19, 20, 25 year olds, they think they know everything. I think the parents know nothing. You know, was it the famous quote from Mark Twain? When I was 16, I couldn't believe how little my father knew. By the time I was 20, I couldn't believe how much he learnt in the 4 years, you know, in between. But so children obviously have to realise that very often they are in danger of making bad decisions, and they have to listen to the parents. But at a certain point, the parents say no. The parents cannot enforce that, and that is the halach in Shulchan Aruch number 25. V'chein im ha'av mocheh ben. The father objects to the son, Nisa Eze Isha Sheikhbos Benaben, to marry whatever woman the son wants to marry. Ain't the Tzarek Lishmoy Alav. He doesn't have to listen to the father. And by the way, that's true equally of the daughter. And that's true of the Ashkenazi or Sfardi, Rav Avadi Yosef, Zeicher Tzadik L'Rav, the Paskin, these halachas, like the Ramah, not like the Shulchan Aruch. Interesting. He brings and says that the child doesn't have to marry someone the parents say that. Of course, the parents don't have to pay for a wedding. That's a different thing, which is a financial issue, but the child doesn't have to marry the person that the parent says they have to marry. Look at 26, another application, that the child doesn't have to break a mitzvah because the parents want them to break halacha. Amaloy aviv la'avor al dibrei Torah. The parents say to you that you have to break a mitzvah. Bein mitzvah sase, whether it's a positive mitzvah, bein mitzvah loy sase, or a negative mitzvah. Afilu mitzvah shel devarim, even a rabbinic mitzvah. Lo yishmalot. Don't listen to them. You can't listen to them. Again, you have to be polite. But you can't listen to them. You can't compromise your olam haba. Again, your parents can't ask you to give up olam haba to respect them. That's not acceptable. A minhag, so there. So that's an interesting thing. Let's first of all talk about a chumrah. A chumrah, for sure, a child has no business keeping a chumrah and thereby being lenient in kibud av v'eim, because then the chumrah becomes a kula. And one of the rules of chumrahs is you're not allowed to keep a chumrah stringency if it's going to result in a leniency. A minhag can be very binding on a person. A minhag can be binding, and a minhag can be binding almost with Torah law. Chasam Sofer says a minhag has a din of a neder. You know, if the daughter marries an Ashkenazi, let's say, and the parents are Sephardi, the daughter's a Sephardi, and they go round to the parents' house and the parents make them rice and Pesach, and they say to her, "Oh, silly nonsense. Well, you know, you're a Sephardi, yeah, really. You know, eat the rice and be happy. Don't worry about the silly Ashkenazi minhag." She can't eat the rice and Pesach. She's married to an Ashkenazi, and she has to respect that minhag. Different minhagim have different status. Maybe she can do her faras nadarim on certain minhagim, but basically a minhag does have a stronger status. People use the word minhag. You know, my minhag is to eat bagels and lox on Sunday morning. That's not the kind of minhag we're talking about. So they make a halachic minhag. Okay. Look at number 27. There's a family broigus. And the father, this is Shulchan Aruch, passing these, this is so applicable. The father tells the child, the parents tell the child, "We don't speak to Uncle Harry." Why don't we speak to Uncle Harry? "You don't know what Uncle Harry did to your grandfather in 1956 in the business." Well, like, that was like 50 years ago. Yeah, but we don't talk to Uncle Harry or his side of the family. Says the Shulchan Aruch, the parents can't ask that. Ha'av shesiva et benot shelo yidabe imploni. Not to speak to someone, not to forgive them at man kotsa for a certain time. The child wants to make it up. He wants to make shalom. Miyad, straight away. Relates to the time. In spite of the tzavat ha'ab. Ein lo lachush letzvato. He doesn't have to listen to the parent. Of course he has to be sensitive. You can't run up to Uncle Harry in front of the parents and say, "I love you, Uncle Harry." But you can't perpetuate machloikas. A parent cannot, because that's an aveira. Similarly, number 28. Talmud Torah godl mikibud av v'eim. Now what does that mean? Talmud Torah godl mikibud av v'eim. Look at number 29. She goes on the Shulchan Aruch and says, Talmud, a child, a student rather, shirotzil alechid l'makom acher. They want to go to a place to learn Torah. "Mom, I need to go to Israel. I need to go to Sam. I need to go to Yeshiva." And the parents are not happy. Shehu Boteach, the child or the student, is confident. Sheyira Simon Bracha b'Talmud alifnei harav shesham, that they'll be more successful in their learning. The kids, the parents say, "Can't you just go to Lakewood?" And the other said, "No, I can't go to Lakewood. It's not the same thing. It's not Eretz Israel. I've got to go to Israel." The Aviv Moicheban, the parents object. Why? Not because they're difficult people. The fish should go egg. They're worried. Parents worry. Parents always worried. Okay. Sheba Ota Ha'irin, the place the kid wants to go. Ha'odi Kochavim Alilim, the non-Jews are dangerous. You ever heard about this such a case? Okay? Ainut Tarich Lishmol Avi Pasa. He doesn't have to listen to his parents. Now again, his parents don't have to pay. You know? You want to go to Sam? So you raise the $23,000 and see and the simcha. But at the end of the day, the child doesn't have to give up again. That's called Michel Ben. The child doesn't have to give up such a fundamental part of who they want to be. "I want to be someone connected to Israel." Aliyah is the same. Okay, if the child says, "I need to make Aliyah, I want to make Aliyah," and the parents can be, I spoke to a student of mine almost, she was in tears last week, a couple of weeks ago, I was in America. She said, my mother rings me, my calls me on the phone 3 times a day, "Promise me, promise me, promise me, you'll never go and live in Israel. Promise me." So she said, I can't promise her. I said, "No, you can't promise her. Your mother comes like saying, 'Promise me you'll never keep Shabbos.'" You know, you can't say that to somebody. And therefore, a person has, of course, if the parent's a clever parent, so what they'll do is as follows. They'll say to the kid, "Okay, you can go to Israel, but these are my conditions. Okay? And if they make it a condition in the money, I'm giving you $23,000 to go to school on these conditions," so then the kid's bound by the conditions. And if the kid wants to break the conditions, then they have to pay the money back. So, you know, a clever parent might do it that way, but if the parent doesn't do it that way, the child is not necessarily. I had this many times. I had this during the Intifada back in the 2003-04. I have this a little bit now, although it's not the same, Baruch Hashem, as it was then. But my parents don't want me to take buses. Do I have to listen to them? So again, are your parents paying for you to take cabs? Yes, they are. Okay, so if you have to take a cab. If it reaches the point at which taking cabs is completely stopping you from living, I now can't do any of the tiulim with my friends, I can't go anywhere, I can't do anything. We had a girl at MMY, I teach at MMY, I wasn't there then, we had a girl many, many years ago, before I came, during the Intifada, And the mother said to the school, my daughter can come to Sen on condition she cannot leave the building. She cannot leave the building. It's dangerous. Now, the building was in Givat Shaul. Okay? So, really? Yes. So the school said, you know something, you're the mother. We respect your wishes. If your daughter, if you wish your daughter not to leave, we will make sure that that is okay. And someone else did her groceries, someone else did her washing, etc. The girl was hemmed into the building. At a certain point in the year, the mother called at the school, this is a true story, and said to the school, I'm prepared to relax on one condition. She can go visit my sister, but no one else. She says, well, where does your sister live? She goes, Gush Katif. your daughter can't go to the Makalet in Givat Shaul, but she can go to Gaza? Yes. Okay, that's how logical parents are sometimes. But number 30, I'll just finish with number 30 and make one my final comment. In number 30, the Shulchan Aruch wants to say that throughout all of this, the parents are encouraged to be moichel on their kofod. Osur la'adam la'hachbid ola al banav. A parent is not allowed to be too strict on their children. Uladakdek b'kvoido imahem, and to be too insistent on their kavod. Shelo yavim lidei michshol, otherwise they will make them rebel. They will cause them to, they will put a burden in front of them. And a yimchol, a parent should be forgiving. The ya'alim einav, I like this. You have to turn a blind eye from certain things. I never saw that. I never heard what you just said. We carry on from here. That's necessary. Sheha'av shemachal akvoidu kvoidu machal. Now there comes a point where that becomes a problem, that he's too much of a blind eye. Look at Eli and Chofni and Pinchas. Look at Yitzhak and Esav. A blind eye sometimes can lead the child astray, but sometimes mechila is necessary. And it's not just parents. I brought you in the last five sources. I'm not going through them now because we're out of time. But it's other relatives as well. Step-parents are included. In-laws, perhaps on a lower level of kavod, and certainly when there's a conflict with the parents take priority. And I brought you at the end, number 37, grandparents. Grandparents are also included in kibbud av va'em, although when there's a conflict between the grandparents and the direct parents, so the direct parents have priority, but the grandparents are also considered, because they're also avi, aviv, the father of the father, the mother of the father, etc., are also av va'em. And therefore, I think lots of things to think about. Especially that sensitive line between the parents asking the kids to do something which is just a little bit uncomfortable, which the kid has to do, or something which is fundamental, which the kid may be able to turn around and say, no, I don't have to do that. Anyway, all has to be done with great politeness. We'll leave it there for now. And next week there will be a shir on Hanukkah. Please go next Wednesday morning, where we will be going on to other things.